Thank you, David. As David said, I'm Will Sell, and I'm with NOAA Fisheries here in the Pacific Northwest. And it's nice outside, and this is a dreary room. And you've been here for 3 days, and I'm feeling a little pressure to make it short. So I will keep it short. Let me pick up on what Larry said and color in a little bit of the story of this setting from my perspective. And then do a little bit of crystal balling. So the story begins with, again, this is from a very parochial, narrow perspective of the regional administrator of NOAA Fisheries in the Pacific Northwest just dealing with stuff that comes across your radar screen in almost a kind of random way. And the constant setting of that is akin to driving forever, kind of at dusk, when you're tired and you're in unfamiliar territory, and you're probably driving a little too fast because you're in a rush, and you think you know where you're going, and you think you can see the road marks, but in fact you probably can't, or maybe you can see about 70% of them, and that's about it. So you're in a kind of perpetual zone of uncertainty and high risk, but you gotta keep driving. So that's the kind of optimistic setting of my workplace. In the fall of, I think it was the fall of 2010 or so, as we were regurgitating the, that's a bureaucratic term, for the, or conducting our ESA, MMPA reviews, to be more formal, of the Puget Sound Chinook co-management harvest, 5-year co-management harvest plan, generally a routine matter. That in and of itself is a delicate exercise because it reflects an intrusion, if you will, a federal intrusion from a domestic U.S. perspective into the domain of the co-managers occupied by the tribal sovereigns and the state sovereigns. And overlaid, obviously, with the bilateral management regimes we have in place with our brothers and sisters to the north through the Pacific Salmon Treaty. And our federal intrusion, if you will, in some respects, is to ascertain, it's a limited role, and it's to ascertain whether or not the harvest regimes will be acceptable from a perspective of the long-term conservation of the affected marine mammal stocks, killer whales in particular, and the listed salmonid stocks under the Endangered Species Act, to wit, whether or not those harvests are going to provide for adequate escapement of the wild runs on a drainage-by-drainage basis. And as we were working through that exercise and coming towards the tail end of it, hopefully driving along happily, confident that we know where we're going, it suddenly a big thing popped up in the middle of the road, and it said southern killer whale impacts associated with it, this and cumulative harvest rates. And maybe it's not okay. And this was a huge flag that went up. And it immediately created a complete or almost complete disorientation, if you will, because the ramifications of this could ricochet all over the place, directly and indirectly, in ways that were almost unimaginable. You could almost chuckle about it. It would be so complex and so contradictory in a way. And as that, as we came to recognize this issue of the effects of Chinook abundance on the long-term productivity of the orca populations, we began to try to get our bearings and figure out, oh, shoot, what do we do now? And in the answering of that question, there were several things that happened that were really surprising to me. The first, and understand that there are a lot of choices to be made by a lot of governments as we all were entering this twilight zone. And those choices cumulatively ended up having you impaneled to give us some help. Those choices were not necessarily the only choices that were available to all of the sovereigns who were involved in this. So there were two things of note to me as we went through this twilight zone of, oh gosh, what do we do now? The first one of which I remembered absolutely vividly, where we convened a meeting of the co-managers, state, federal, state, tribal, and federal co-managers to talk through where we NOAA fisheries were in our evaluation and to break the news, if you will, that wasn't so great. And I personally had absolutely no idea what to expect from this meeting. I accept to know that the issue was incredibly loaded and very dangerous and with ramifications and risks all over the place for everybody. And the most noteworthy characterization of that meeting, again, from my recollection and vantage point, was how quiet it was, how sober and focused it was, and how responsible it was. There were no histrionics. There were no big speeches. There was no table pounding. People drilled right into the content of the subject matter and stayed focused on the content of the subject matter. And that was it, and that was all it was. You could tell that everybody understood the risk setting that we were in, the mutual shared risk setting, and the potential ramifications that all of us could trigger by our individual choices. And the outcome was people stayed focused. And coming out of that session, and it was remarkable, I will not forget that session, because I didn't expect it. Coming out of that session, we immediately rolled into we need to drill deeper into the subject matter here in a credible, thoughtful way with our brothers and sisters to the north, because it's a shared issue. And so, and as we mapped out the next steps, again, there were many choices available to the tribal governments, to the state government, to the federal government in a domestic U.S. perspective, and to our brothers and sisters to the north, not to do this. And there were lots of opportunities to exercise those choices in whatever judicial venue you chose, or political venue you chose, or media venue you chose. And again, the response, the bilateral response between us to the south and us to the north, was to stay focused on the substance. And that led to the impaneling of you and what has been an incredibly productive 18-month effort, with a huge amount of effort by you and by all of the participants here to drill much more deeply. So first and foremost, my general commentary this morning would be to give you, the panel, a heartfelt thanks for the work y'all have done, because we're in a high-risk zone that's very difficult with very serious ramifications, and we need the the best scientific information we can to help us navigate through that twilight zone. And the second is to also, in parallel, thank all of the sovereign governments who have made the choices, their own individual choices, to stay focused. Starting with our brothers and sisters to the north, the First Nations, and DFO, and extending here in the south to the tribal governments, the state of Washington, and everybody else. Again, and let me underscore, this didn't need to happen. And maybe 10, 12, 15 years ago, it wouldn't have happened. But it's a testimony to having gone through many crucibles together on similar natural resource conflicts and learning the lessons of staying focused on the substance of the matter and paying attention to what the science tells us and doesn't tell us. And that's just not happy talk from my perspective. It's totally real, and I've got tons of scar tissue that testifies to some of those realities. Prospectively, we're still in a twilight zone. And as you fashion your final report, y'all aren't stupid. You understand the context that we're wrestling in a strategic managerial policy perspective. You understand the issues and the tensions in those issues. So as you polish up and finish your report, be mindful of what work is facing us and the choices that we're going to have to make, and use your smarts on the science of that landscape to sharpen your observations about the information and your recommendations about it and what it informed, how it may inform our choices as you understand the context within which we're operating. As you do so, if there are issues that you're not sure of, and there are probably lots of them, talk to Larry, talk to Paul, talk to David, so that you make sure that you're not shooting at the wrong targets. But absolutely understand the context within which we are going to be taking your advice. We are going to be taking your advice. There is no rock that we're going to be able to bury it under, even if we wanted to. That ain't going to happen. Nor is there any option for us simply to set it aside and say, oh, just kidding. So we have no choice but to deal with these topics and to make the tough choices, the tough managerial choices that are in front of us. Appreciate that, you do, and hone your recommendations accordingly. And then hold us accountable and see how we do. Sometimes we do okay, sometimes we don't do okay. So again, I'll stop there, turn it back to David, but let me leave with, again, a reiteration of my dual thanks. First of all, for the choices that the governments have made to stay focused on this tough subject and to convene your expertise, and secondly, for the dedication you and everybody who's participated in this process that has brought to bear to the problem at hand. Thank you very much.
I'm open to
sure.
Some questions. Any questions?
We can talk about scar tissue.
Don't have to
it's ugly.
Or talk about how scientists are all babies. No?
Any questions here? Okay, well, thanks very much. That was really helpful, guys. We appreciate it.
Right.
Analysts are all looking really serious. Like, they've got a huge burden on them now. Report will not be ignored. So that's really what you have to go do now. is the analysts have to get to work, and Alex and I will do our best to keep things all focused. So I think that's basically the end of the meeting. I'd just like to ask anyone if they have any other closing comments they'd like to make or suggestions. A little bit ahead of schedule, so... No? Okay, well, I'd just really like to thank everyone. It's been a real privilege to work on these three workshops and have learned an enormous amount, starting from a very low point of learning curve, I should add. So many thanks to everyone, and look forward to further comments on as we do the final report. And safe travels.
Thank you.